With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine.
Just call me Britta because I'm filtering out toxic people, places, and things.
Everyone's a bottom when you're at the top. It's for pride.
Wait,
that's for pride month.
Wait, you said before you were like, I'm not sure about my tag. That was an iconic tag. That was really good. I was right, I feel like I'm like dance momming you. I'm like, that's so good, sweetie. It's like giving big Kris Jenner energy, and I'm here for it. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 232. I'm so excited to be joined by one of my favorite people to follow online, to text, just constantly bothering you with my takes and questions and more. You know her from going viral on social, I swear to God, more often than New York One gives a weather update. This woman knows how to get our attention, and I love her for it. Writer, producer, host of the podcast Pot Psychology, proprietor of PipeDreams.com, who's actually wearing...
That fun.
Did I say calm? It's because I don't know how to have fun.
F-U-N.
It's because I don't know how to have it, Tracy Morsey. Pipedreams.fun. She is selling some of the sassiest, most fabulous merch on the interwebs and is also doing some merch for a great cause, including a shirt that she will tell us about that she's wearing to record. Welcome back to Andy's Girls, a woman who knows herself a lot of fun, Tracy Morsey. Tracy.
What an intro. Oh my God.
I mean, don't you love a little
it's
typo?
It's been too long.
Don't you love a little typo? It's been a minute, hasn't it?
Yeah. And there have been a lot of shows on. I feel like it's constantly Housewives. It feels a lot like work, actually, to keep up lately, because I've been kind of overrun. Because there's, what, like four going on right now?
We've got Atlanta, Dubai, Beverly Hills. I feel like I'm missing one.
Girls Trip.
Girls Trip. I have to say, last week felt a little bleak, not just even yes. in content, not because of SCOTUS, just in the sense of watching, in order to record that episode three, I had to watch three episodes of Girls Trip, Dubai, Beverly Hills. It was a lot of content.
Hours.
Literally hours even, you guys. Literal hours. And I decided to start watching season four of Love Island, which had been recommended to me by friend of the pod, Mariah Smith, as the season to start with. Although I've seen another season previously, but I was talking about this with a friend. I don't remember, shout out Katie, I don't remember what season I've seen, who won.
Me neither. I've only ever watched one season.
I couldn't tell you what it was.
My issue with that show is there's too many episodes. Because in the UK, it comes on like several times a week.
I think it's every night or 5 days a week.
Is it every night? Oh, wow. Yeah. So that's just too much. And like not enough happens for me. They need to like do a recap episode of the week for streaming because it's too many.
Well, so they actually do a recap episode. I got permission to skip those. It was, I think, including the Christmas special, which honestly was my favorite. It was like literally 57 or 58 episodes. Skipped the recaps, but I think it's every night. I mean, it's like, it's a real commitment. It's actually one of those shows that my guess is easier to watch in real time than binging. But I watched all of season four in like, I'm not kidding, 45 minutes. I just got through 57, 58 episodes accepting the recaps. And my God, I feel like I have accomplished something in my life, to be honest. It's a lot. But anyway, how's Brooklyn? How are you doing? What a wild question to ask any woman in the country right now. But how are you? How's your day going so far?
It's okay. You know, I feel like helpless. So like there's nothing that I can do, and I'm not even pregnant in a hostile state. I can't imagine what it's like for those women and girls, like little girls, 13, 14 year old girls who've been sexually assaulted and are unable to obtain an abortion. It's so fucking heartbreaking. But I don't know. The only thing I can do is I made shirts. They're embroidered. It says abortion is healthcare. I have crop tops, t-shirts, sweatshirts, and hats. And on all of the product pages, there's a list of places where you can donate money to the states where now abortion is almost completely banned or will be banned by the end of the month. Be completely banned. I mean, it's quite a lot of states. And then the proceeds from the shirts will go to be split among those organizations. The organizations are places that help women get abortions out of state. They provide funding, they provide logistics, transportation, all of that kind of thing.
I highly encourage people, get yourself a fabulous looking shirt, make a difference.
Wear it to a protest.
I have to say shout out to the 18 maybe women content creators who came together to raise some funds over the weekend. We raised over $10,000 for Planned Parenthood, which is incredible. All thanks to people for donating. And I heard from a lot of people who were like, can we please do a fundraiser for more targeted organizations that are on the ground, organizations that you know, everyone thinks of Planned Parenthood first. Mm-hmm. Like, are there other organizations we can support? And I hear you. We'll do another fundraiser. To be honest, I think so many of us were in shock when the ruling came down. This was a group effort that came together, and I'm not fucking with you, like literally 30 minutes. And we're so overwhelmed with the response. I do want to do another one. So slide into my DMs, or actually don't do that. I'm going to be posting an Instagram story when this episode goes up with your recommendations of organizations to consider for doing this again. I want to shout out everyone who donated. That's literally, I had a fundraising goal of $2,000 to reach in a month. And I was like, I don't know. I've never done any kind of fundraising on social before. And just want to thank everybody for donating. It was really, really incredible to see.
It's really depressing.
It's really depressing. It's like a weird thing to be hosting a podcast about housewives at this moment in time, because it's like, couldn't we just sit in silence for an hour? Because often that is what my instinct is to do. But the exception to that is this could be hopefully a welcome distraction for people, regardless of how you feel about the ruling on Friday. And I also think, what better time to listen to women talk to and with each other, to talk about behavior that we're watching and our opinions about other women, you know, on a TV show that's focused really on women's lives. I think it's a pretty good time to talk about housewives, psych, and truly anything at all, because if you're anything like me, all I've been craving in the last couple days is honestly absolutely everything, content and otherwise. So hopefully AG can be a little bit of a respite or connector, distraction or discovery, whatever the fuck you need it to be. Can we please talk about Girls Trip?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. It's like, I mean, I devoured those first three episodes that they put up on Peacock. It was, I mean, the thing is, it was not at all shocking that Vicky is anti-vax, but I thought it was shocking that she was cast on a show where production rules probably required people to be vaccinated, right?
I mean, what was more shocking to me, there are genuine medical exceptions that exist. I didn't think that she would have one, but then I heard when she was talking about her diagnosis and I was like, oh, okay, like that might be one, and I'm not going to judge her for that because there are genuine medical exceptions. What was surprising to me was that the rest of the cast didn't know that she wasn't vaccinated. Like, yeah. Phaedra really didn't know. I do think that.
And she's showing up there sniffling and coughing.
I what know. And like sharing a room with Tamra. I was like, man, if I was Tamra, this is the moment that I would be like, cool, is there another pullout couch? Like, I don't know, man. That's some tough stuff. I was honestly, because we had all heard that there were going to be arguments about vax stuff, politics stuff in the lead up for the premiere. So that wasn't necessarily surprising. What was surprising to me was that Vicky literally said I had COVID, because I didn't think she was even aware of that. I thought she was going to say I had like a cold of nameless origin.
Probably because she probably had to be tested, because she still, it seemed like she was still dealing with COVID residual stuff, like after she had it. She probably had to be tested I'm sure she had to be tested for the production, right?
Oh, yeah. I think that's like a bare minimum. Although she had a sinus infection. So she hopefully was no longer, I mean, it's entirely possible that she was no longer contagious with COVID.
Yeah,
my hope would be that they would ensure that as best they could, and then had a sinus infection. But like, how fucking scary to be a cast member being like, what's happening?
Well, you know what's interesting is that for The Real World Homecoming, the series that's on Paramount Plus, they all have to quarantine for a full week in a hotel room by themselves, where they're not even able to, you know, see producers, get food, whatever, their stuff is delivered to them. And I don't think that they did this for Girls Trip. I don't think they did a quarantine. It doesn't seem like it. It seems like Taylor, Tamra, and Vicky all hopped off a plane from Orange County together.
Yeah, it's confusing. Also because I've only seen Real World Homecoming New York, which was exceptional. And I know the other seasons that they've done are supposed to be great. I just haven't had a chance watch them. But poor sweet Eric tested positive, like maybe the day before filming. So this poor man who like really could use the resurgence. He's doing so much good work in his life and like such a sweet guy, and had to like, you know, FaceTime in.
It was such a bummer.
I felt so bad for him.
And I love Eric Nice. I still have such a giant crush on him. God. Now, especially that he's like sober, but he's a shaman. He like leads people through like ego death trips for mushrooms, like with mushrooms. Like he does it as like a spiritual ceremony.
What's an ego death trip? What does that mean?
Oh, an ego death. It's like when you achieve... I'm going to do a terrible job of explaining it.
Okay.
It's like you have to take like a shit ton of mushrooms and you come to terms with yourself and you realize your importance or lack of importance in the world, you know?
Okay.
You realize and you just kind of like come to understand, you know, what complete loss of subjective self-identity.
Are you Googling it right now?
Yeah.
All right. I was like, I'm going to do a terrible job. Like, I hear a little pitter patter of that. Yeah, wow. Okay. Well, I mean, go air. I wish that they could do it again, honestly. They need to do a, I don't know, some sort of all stars, real world OGs or something, because I feel like he deserves another
chance.
They've
been doing that on the challenge, but he's not been involved in it. He's on a journey. He's on a different journey now. He's like, the challenge is like they're just trying to win money, but he's, you know, he went to do the real world. Yeah, he went to do the real world homecoming because they were talking about like actual like political issues. Right. That's what they've been doing on all these seasons, which has been really, really interesting and makes the show really compelling. But anyway, back to Housewives.
Yeah, no, sorry guys, we had to detour a little bit. Once I get started on Real World OG, I can't stop. So what was your expectation? Did you think this season was going to be a little bit of like a chaotic shit show? Is that what you've been watching pan out? Like, how has watching the first three episodes, has that in any way changed maybe your potential perception of what this specific cast was going to be like?
This is better than the first one. This is better than the first one. Yes, because the first one was OGs who are people who, they're women who are definitely compelling, but they also know how to play the game to stay safe enough to stay on the shows, to stay likable. And these women, the ex-wives club, they are just the women that don't give a fuck. Like, they just do not, they are themselves unapologetically. They're not gonna, you know, bow toward anyone else. I mean, it's not like it's not like they're total animals or whatever, but they're just more themselves. I don't know. And also, I forgot how much I loved Phaedra, and she has been such a light to come back on the show. Like, I love her on TV. I love seeing her on TV.
If you think of the return of these women on season two as a strategic move to either get back in the zeitgeist or audition for a return to Housewives, how successful have these women been?
I think that they've all been really, well, not all of them.
Right.
I think that Phaedra.
Yep. Superstar Brandy, return. Really?
Tamra. Yeah, okay. Brandy. The whole reason why anyone's fighting is basically because of Brandy and Vicky. Although Vicky just is like, but at least Brandy gets in there, gets involved, and she has issues that people can talk about. Vicky has been a real bummer. Like, she won't do anything. She doesn't feel like doing anything. She doesn't want to participate in stuff, but she definitely still has... she's definitely still thinks that she's the OG and she's better than everyone else and she doesn't have to do what she doesn't want to do. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really interesting when Brandy was like, yes, some of these girls who only just got off the show like a year or two ago are still in this like mindset. She's like, I've been off for years now, and you like get out of that kind of mindset. I thought that was like an interesting insight into the way their minds work, the way that they are, you know, with each other.
Do you think it's possible to be off the show too long? Like, what happens when the show moves forward or in a different direction that's completely antithetical to your experience or the way that the universe existed when you were on, i.e. Taylor?
Taylor.
And Jill, I guess. No, I mean, I don't know how much it's changed in New York, but.
But Jill knows all those women for years and years and years.
So I think it's different. Yeah.
Taylor, I don't know. I mean, but Taylor's, she seems to be doing like okay. And the fact that she's like friendly with Tamara and Vicky because they live near each other is interesting. But I don't know. Like it was, I'm glad that they threw Taylor into the mix, mm-hmm. honestly. And I think Eva was just needed for, they needed someone to have good vibes. Like they needed someone to bring light to that, a lot of dark energy that they had. And I'm so, so happy that we're moving into this phase in on Housewives on several shows where they're openly talking about their use of marijuana and edibles and stuff. I love it because it's better for you than drinking wine, honestly. And it's like, it's just less socially acceptable and it's like newer, you know, because now it's legalized in many places. So people still consider it like how the way Vicky was saying when she was like, it's a drug. It's a drug. I don't do drugs. And Tamara was like, it's not a drug. It's marijuana. I don't know. I would have, if I were one of them, I would have absolutely been like, oh, Brooks didn't need to be on marijuana when he was having his chemo.
Oh, no.
You know?
I mean,
so
yikes.
But I love that they're doing this. I love that they're so open about it. I love that they're just like hanging out and smoking weed and drinking wine because that's like my vibe. And I like that they're doing that. And I think they're all like making fun of Dorinda because she said she was on pause, but I have it on good authority that she was on pause, that she was just told to like sit a season out, which actually was, I think, a bad decision on producers' parts because that last season was just such a mess of New York. So, but she was like, you know, it was like a NeNe thing where they're like, you sit this one out, you know, you can come back later.
But I feel like the NeNe aspect of it is different than Dorinda's. I feel like there was, this is the thing that I kind of struggle with, because obviously we don't know I don't know the specifics of the conversation. I 1,000 believe that they use the language on pause. I 1,000 believe that Andy and the network did not think this was a permanent firing or as much of a firing as with sort of everyone else. Like on pause, I think was a very specific calculated phrase that was smart to use. Like I believe it. But when you're having that conversation with her, when you're telling her she's on pause, are you explaining to her why? Because what I'm watching in watching her behavior is examples of the reason she was put on pause. Because she got really dark and her anger, it's like if you think of the percentage of a person and how your anger just kind of can seep in as a guttural instinct and get uglier and uglier, I think from it had always existed, she's always been dealing with this for quite a while, and it just, the percentage got greater and greater on New York and then kind of took over. They put her on pause, but I don't know if they told her like, this is the reason why, if it in fact was. But I'm watching her on Girls Trip and I'm like, I don't see her getting unpaused.
I don't see it happening because of the way that things are going to be going with that franchise. It's just like a total mess. And like their casting is, you know, like a disaster, and they are just pausing the entire show for at least a year. But I heard from a housewife that I'm friendly with that she had had a conversation with Dorinda and had told her that it was because that she didn't show any like remorse or compassion
100%
during her last reunion.
Which
and this one housewife was like, you have to kind of, you know, make up with some people, and you have to like sort of, you know, be able to say that you're still willing to work with them and blah, blah, blah. And like you can't just like demand that you can't make demands about the cast. And that's kind of what she had done. And so that's why they were like, you know, we're going to put, I think that they wanted to put her on ice and sort of like slap her on the hand, like, you know, give her, give her something to think about. And then, but it still seems like she's, like she hasn't, yeah, really accepted that. I don't know. I mean, the other thing is that this is in her house. And I would be kind of shitting myself if these women were like running around my house with their shoes on and like, you know, doing. And she does probably feel like she has to host.
Yeah, I mean, I think that she's taking the hosting idea in the worst possible way, which is like allowing these aspects of her personality, which were already kind of counterproductive for her continuing on Housewives, and allowing it to run rampant. And I don't begrudge her for that, but I also am like, sweetie, this is not the way. And why did I put on you as a person my expectation that you would have grown a little? Like, maybe that's unfair of me, but if we're going to talk about ego death, there is the idea that, like, I don't know, there's like a, this is super unfair, they're very different people, but there's a sense of like groundedness and humor that Tamra has applied to being fired. Like, she went on an Instagram live right after she was fired and said with Andy and was like, you fired me. Like, she just like, she had a sardonic way of just like not necessarily making light of it, although she did, but also just kind of moving through it and seemed humble about it, which is really tough when you're like publicly fired, you know. Like, there's a way that she went about it where it wasn't a pity me tour like Teddy Joe, who I just bring up to trigger myself. But with Dorinda, I'm like, okay, did we just hold strong because so many people in the community and audience just told you what a bad move this was, and we decided that their opinion mattered more than like the counsel you may have been given from production? Like, what happened here? I feel like we're not learning the lesson that maybe some of us just really, really hoped and or expected that you would.
I just want to point out that I don't think any of the housewives should have an ego death, because then they wouldn't be good housewives.
Like, they 100%.
They need to to be kind of like not self-aware. They need to be like kind of up their own asses. Not to the point that Vicky is. That Vicky, like, kind of, I mean, I still laugh at her a lot, like some, like how she's so ridiculous, but like, she's just not. It was different when she was like getting drunk and having fun and and stuff like that. But now it's just like a downer the whole time, which I'm not like into. She's like not. Yeah, I don't know. And how she's like just kind of being a bitch to Dorinda.
She really is being incredibly disrespectful. If I was Dorinda, I would be super pissed.
But also, like, Dorinda, and not to like, I mean, listen, no offense to people on the West Coast, you're just, people from in New York are just sharper. It's, they're just sharper. Tracy, they're sharper and faster.
People already cancel me ever because I say one thing and people go on my whatever and say, you're a stupid cunt because of that one thing. That, like, I don't need this in my life, Tracy.
If you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. Everyone knows it.
I mean, look at half the cast of
New York.
Not
everyone from Orange County can cut it here, I'm telling you.
Not everybody from New York can either. Not me defending the West Coast.
Well, then they leave. But I'm just saying, like, they're just, there's just something about New York. And listen, like, I don't agree with, like, Ramona's politics, obviously. But I do think that she would be able to argue circles around Vicky. Like, I think that she, like, Vicky to me seems like willfully ignorant about stuff that, and expects people to just accept that about her, which I really just, I don't like, you know. What were they talking about? They were talking about something and they were like, now I sound like an idiot because I don't remember, but like they didn't know like what a word meant, or they didn't know what something was. What was that?
They were all talking.
It was like, and then Brandy had to correct them or something. She knew what it was. I forget what it was.
I forget.
Anyway, I just think that Dorinda, you know, she's lived abroad. She was married to Richard, who was, you know, involved in politics.
And finance, I think, too. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's just been around a different kind of crowd. And I think that, like, it just, Vicky's crassness really, it really shows when compared to Dorinda. And Dorinda curses like a sailor, yells and screams, and she's drunk. But she just it's just obvious that she's more worldly.
Well, I think that Dorinda initially really tries to be gracious, even though I have to say the way she was talking to Marco, like calling herself like the lady of the manor or whatever, made me feel extremely uncomfortable. But mm-hmm. when I look at Vicky, I'm like, okay, you technically just got dumped yesterday, even though this man did not want to have sex with you for 13 months and was living in another country. So I don't know how much
in your house.
In your house. So I truly, while I don't want to take away from her pain, how much of this was a surprise. But all that being said, her having a puss on her face when she rolled in, I don't think mm-hmm. we can put all of that on her breakup with no. Steve. I think she didn't want to do this. She wanted mm-hmm. to be in on an island, season one, on a mm-hmm. yacht, having champs with Kyle and mm-hmm. some all-stars, and felt like this was beneath her. I mean, like, Jill says as much in a confessional too, although Jill is like
yeah.
much better
Vicky
equipped.
Thinks everything's
to do this.
Beneath her.
She does, and that's not super interesting to watch. And it makes you wonder, mm-hmm. honestly, as much as she's desperate to come back on Housewives, if this is just the kind of Vicky that we're gonna get, someone who just eye rolls at all of the newbies or anyone else who doesn't bow to her, and that is kind of the Vicky Gumbelson that we're going to see from now on. Like, how many times can the woman be called an OG of the OC before she believes that OC doesn't exist without her and she needs to be treated as such?
Mm-hmm. This is my show!
I mean, but, like, for real, she really... But, like, the way that she has so much disdain for her environment, or really sort of any environment, I just don't know how conducive that is for, like, entertaining content if she yeah. has already spiritually tapped out.
And but don't get me wrong, like, there are women that have been on this show who think that basically everything is beneath them, but they yeah. bring other things, like Lisa Vanderpump, but yes. they bring other things to the table, whether it's like humor, good one-liners, you know, just having fun, mm-hmm.
Strategy.
Having things going on in their lives. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Doing
and
the work.
Vicky is just like, yeah, Vicky just like shows up and thinks that that's enough. And it's like, it's ma'am, enough. You sell insurance. Like, it's, you're an insurance salesperson. And yeah, I know that you're a successful single mother, but like, it's not that, it's not a glamorous job or very exciting. I would say probably it seems extremely boring. Although, you know, I do believe that she was doing work emails. I got to hand it to her. She has a work ethic like nobody else.
Also, I don't even sort of care about the content because I think so much of most jobs are boring. It's like you being successful at this and creating it from the ground up is great, but that can't be your personality. Like, Coto yeah. Insurance can't be your personality. And it's tough because I think she is probably a difficult person to be friends with if you yourself are also a housewife. And I think Tamra's in a really difficult spot because she's trying to be a friend to this woman who she knows is like wild, but also wants to put on a good show. Like, that's difficult because Tamra, I think, is like, honestly, all things considered, doing a pretty good job.
Really
it just
intuitive.
Sucks. Yeah, she is.
Tamara, she knows what's up. But you don't think Brandy's doing a good job?
It's not that I don't think she's doing a good job. She's obviously being herself, which is
yeah.
She's giving Brandy. It just, to me, when we talk about how like the future of Housewives has moved on in some ways, when it comes to like Brandy, would she potentially fit in as a housewife today? Like, yes, because she is an element. She is like a cycle of chaos. And mm-hmm. so she would shine bright and fast and be the shooting star she was before. But it's tough for me to watch a woman who constantly is angered when questions are asked about like why she hasn't grown. Like, she takes mm-hmm. that as an insult, and it's like, I get that, but, like, it's insulting because it's True.
Yeah, I mean, I just, the thing about Brandy that seems just a little sad to me is that it's like kind of very clear that she has a drinking problem.
Do you because think so?
Okay. She's, I mean,
I don't know.
When your personality changes so drastically, and everyone who has been on any show with her has said that, when your personality changes so drastically when you drink, like, that's not manageable. That's not something that, you know, it's not. It's-
Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo. And when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth. And when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon. Conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andyscrolls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today.
It's not good.
But I still think sort of similar to Dorinda, there is, I'm sure, an element of truth to that. But I do think she would be just as angry if she wasn't drinking, which makes me think that there's like underlying stuff here that she's hiding or allowing to come into light when she has alcohol, which like I'm sure entirely proves your point. But also, when are we going to address this stuff? Like her, the way that she
says she's been in therapy, though, hasn't she?
So is Vicky.
Did she say that?
I mean, I think a lot of these women have sought therapy or counseling, but like at a certain point, I don't know. I'm not seeing, With Vicky, I genuinely am seeing evidence of in some aspects, the way that she handled Dorinda, I am seeing evidence of, like, personal growth, truly. The way that mm-hmm. she de-escalated stuff when Dorinda was, like, cycling up, I was like, oh, okay, this is an example to me of somebody who's, like, putting the work into action. With Brandy,
I think she was just afraid. I think that was just fear. I don't think that was growth at all.
Yeah, but you can respond to fear in different ways. And the way that she said in her confessional, this woman is going to continue to flip out. Why am I going to contribute to that? Why don't I just try to de-escalate? Whatever language she used, I thought was a valid point. With Brandy, I'm like, I'm seeing no evidence of any kind of effort or work. In fact, I'm seeing the opposite. This is a woman who's holding very strong to having opinions based on absolutely nothing. Having emotion.
I thought that was really funny, though. The eyebrows thing, and she delivered it with such a deadpan that, like, I literally burst out laughing when I was watching it.
But that, I mean, like, no, the eyebrows thing, I absolutely laughed, but I'm thinking more the, like, well, you did write a book really early, and there is, and I did love Russell, and saying these things where you're so...
That was wild.
But she said it so many times.
Taylor did write the book early. I wish that they had explained, like, when Taylor's explanation, I wish that she had said that on the reunion show when Brandy first said that to her. But, yeah, it was really, I think I just think that was all Brandy being drunk. I think she didn't even know. And was that the first dinner that they had? I think that was the first dinner, right?
So,
when she got that drunk and she was saying stuff to Taylor about how she loved Russell and it was very hard for her. That, I mean, that was wild. I think that was a little bit of pills mixed with drinking, because I'm assuming she probably took some Xanax. She talks a lot about taking Xanax. She probably took some Xanax for the plane ride, then got there, and then, you know, maybe she was, like, nervous, so, you know, she was drinking a little faster than normal. I think she was out of her mind totally blotto when she was saying that stuff.
But the thing with, like, why didn't Taylor say it before? I don't think she could, because of her contract with the publisher. Like, Brandy fired shots a decade ago. She didn't have the information. She was in a different place, or so we assumed. So to watch her make the same assumptions without asking this woman and saying repeatedly not only how much she loved Russell, which I thought was incredibly weird.
Did she know him?
I think probably casually, but she's taking on ownership, beginning with admiration or affection for someone who abused his wife, where I was like, why aren't you starting with affection for this woman in front of you? We're starting with this guy. And then to say how much his suicide affected her repeatedly, to center herself and do it without taking any responsibility for how her behavior affected the widow in front of her, was so, to use one of your words, crass. And she didn't take any ownership for any of it. Like, as Taylor herself
remembered. I don't think she remembered it, right? Because they were kind of telling her what she did the night before. Like, that's what I'm saying. I think that she has a drinking problem.
I think she has a brandy problem. And I think it could involve drinking, but I think it can also involve being really way too proud of being emotionally immature and reactive. I think she thinks that that's a badge of honor. And I think she's mistaken. I think she's a little bit wrong.
Yeah. I don't know. But I think that she thought she was, I don't think she thought she was being immature when she was talking about Russell. I think that she was actually thought she was apologizing in that moment. She was just, like, doing it, like, messed up. I mean, I don't know. I just, you don't like come out of a restaurant with a tampon string showing, you know, if you don't have an alcohol problem. I mean, she was like three sheets to the wind, like, when, you know, this has been going on for a decade, you know, at least, right?
I mean, she did have unfiltered, what was the name of her Chardonnay? It was like Unfiltered Blonde or something. Am I making that up? That might be a made
makes
up.
Makes sense. It makes
she
sense.
Had a,
I mean, her,
she had a Chardonnay line. She's not the, you know.
I mean, her book was called Drinking and Tweeting, right?
Right. So it's like, how do you figure out, because alcohol for so many of these cast members becomes almost a part of the environment that you are pressured or in, you know, celebrated to indulge in. How does that work when we are watching this kind of like chaotic behavior repeat itself? I get it. Like, she's at the center of the series, and what would we have without her? But I think we would have other things going on, and I just feel like it's,
I don't know. I like it.
It's depressing. But I get it. Brandy's
being Brandy. I think it's all kind of like dynamite. Who do you wish that they had asked of ex-wives?
Oh, Jesus. That's a great question. I have not thought about at all. Oh, no. Who do you wish? Does anybody come to mind for you? I'll think a little.
I think that.
My head in New York.
I think Tinsley could have been good, but I'm sure Dorinda would never have allowed her in her house.
100%. But I would like to see Tinsley back. Maybe that's the only one from New York.
Yeah, I think so. Right? Unless yeah. Jules. But she's I don't know. But she didn't have enough. She didn't do enough. She had the 1 year. I mean, obviously, Caroline? I would say Nene for
okay.
me. Or Jacqueline, yeah. Loretta.
Jacqueline's. I would say Nene 100%, and I would love to see a little Caroline Manzo back. Would love to see it happen.
She, I'm sure she's like, is just wants so much money, you know, to do anything.
I'm sure she does, but and honestly, that money would be better served bringing her back to Jersey than to an offshoot special series, because she would have more impact if she was, you know, amongst Tree.
Yeah. I never liked Caroline. I always thought she was kind of sour. And
really?
Yeah, she and I never found her children charming. I didn't like the ham game. I didn't like any of that stuff. You know what? I'm from Jersey, so like they're a kind of family, and they're the kind that I didn't like, you know? Like, oh my god, you have a pillow of Christopher? Who gave that to you?
My friend Jackie, I've been dealing with some health stuff, and she sent me a pillow of Chris Manzo that I treasure. I'm showing the screen. It is the wildest gift I've ever received. When I tell you, I scream.
Did he sell those?
No, she literally made it for me.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Is this not like the most perfect gift? Shout out, Jackie. Yeah, I hear you on the sour. She erred on the side of obviously controlling. I mean, the woman is truly thick as thieves with the people. What about Dina?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I love Dina. I mean, I think what's that the fact that there's this whole like the whole criminal yeah. thing with like it seems to me, and I don't know for sure, but it seems that Caroline would have been aware that Tommy was behind that like botched hit or whatever it was when Dina and that and her fiance were beaten up, and to like know that about your sister and to not say anything or help her, and it's and to choose the Manzo side, I think is fucked up.
I mean, if she didn't know before it happened that it was going
she
down,
knows now.
She knows now. And yeah. to write a letter of good character
yeah.
to the judge or the court saying that this is a good guy is like, oh, man, I don't know. That's really tough to inform me. And I don't know how filming Jersey would go, because I actually think Teresa would be. I don't know how that would go, because she truly is such good friends with Dina that like, mm-hmm. And how do you even have that conversation? Cause it's so serious and so legal. Like, how do you even walk through the like aspects? I don't know. If I was Dina, I'd be like, I don't know that I want you to talk about this.
Yeah.
But
probably.
I think it would be a really, really difficult, I think, conversation to even exist, let alone take place. You know,
yeah.
I think that would be incredibly tough. So when it comes to, you know, the enjoyment of Girls Trip versus like BH, for example, what is satiating you at this moment? Like, what are you kind of turning to and being like, this is the vibe, this is the energy that I feel like I'm really enjoying or need right now?
What I like about Girls Trip is that they're all stuck in a place together and they can't escape each other, and they don't have their families to go back home to. We don't have to watch them like do stuff at work. We don't have to like see them playing with their kids or whatever it is. Like, we just get to watch them interact with each other, and that's the my favorite part of the show. So it's like Housewives on steroids. It's like that's what makes the trip so good too when they go away on the show. Is because they're all kind of like stuck together. And but lately they've been putting them in hotel rooms. Beverly Hills, they usually stay in hotel rooms, which it just doesn't have the same effect as when they're all forced to stay in a house together. Like, because, you know, look what happens. Like, Sutton will walk in on Crystal and it creates drama for 2 years.
I mean, that's like the nice thing about this season of Girls Trip. It really actually genuinely does feel in many ways like a classic Housewives trip, which is so wild because it's like you think of the Berkshires versus like a Fabulous Island. What's going to produce the most classically Housewives feel? And I would argue in some ways that it's like maybe Dorinda's house, even though, you know, like the games are kind of low rent and whatever. But it does still feel... That energy of being stuck with these women, as Vicky reminds us every 2 seconds, is suffocating. And that is in many ways reminiscent of a classic Housewives trip, you know, 3 or 4 episode arc.
Yes. So that's what I like about it. It's like it's there's no fat, you know, it's just all the good stuff.
Mm-hmm. And then pivoting a little bit to Beverly Hills, what's your reaction been to the season so far, the cast as it is?
I like the cast. Feeling...
Yeah, tell me.
I like the cast a lot. Diana Jenkins, it sucks that she's not wanting to talk about the rumors about her book because so I wrote the article that they like flashed on screen.
How did I not start with that? I screamed. I texted you. I was like, holy shit. Okay, give us all the background. Oh my God, how did I not start with this? Oh my God.
So the article they put on screen was something I'd written like over 10 years ago.
For Jezebel,
and it was about that website Crazy Days and Nights, which is a blind item gossip website. And there was like a person that had become very active, a commenter had become very active in the comment section, and a lot of people thought that it might be Robert Downey Jr. because this person had a lot of like inside information about stuff and would say all these different things. And then they started talking about this Diana Jenkins book, which I didn't even know who Diana Jenkins was. I didn't know what the book was. And it did seem very, like, I have no idea if it was like a book for call girls or whatever, but it was very weird that there was just this book of like half naked celebrities in weird poses for this. Like, why? What was the point of the book? I never really understood that. So, and I completely forgot that she was the woman until they fucking put that on my article on TV, and I was like, that's that lady. Oh my God. So it sucks for me, like, because I think that that's like super interesting. I'm fascinated by that. I would love if she would talk about that. And she said that it was like this big project she'd been working on, like, but I don't understand. Why was it for charity? Like, why was it called Room 23? I don't get it. I don't get what the artistic elements were behind it. I don't get it. So I was just reporting. I was mostly reporting on this commenter that everyone thought was Robert Downey Jr. And I was reporting on the things that he had said. And that was one of the things that he had said.
So this commenter, oh my God, words are hard, who many people think could be Robert Downey Jr. because it just so happens that the blind items he would comment or the things that he would say always seem to have something to do with people he himself has worked with in the past. So I think a part of it was like compiling the list of like he had thought about this person or this person, and it just so happened the person commenting just so happened that like literally everyone he commented on, there was some sort of link to Robert Downey. But with Diana, is it accurate to say that Room 23, I don't remember if this is true, was named after maybe a room at Chateau Marmont, which is where the photo shoot took place? I don't remember if that's a thing.
And that makes sense. That makes sense. But yeah, like...
But what's the purpose of it?
I'm telling you, like doing a photo shoot with half-naked women in a room at Chateau Marmont is really fucking seedy. It's high-rent seedy.
What's the difference between that, though, and like Madonna doing a book called Sex?
Because Madonna is like an artist who everyone knows who she is, and it's her creative expression. And it was about like slut shaming and owning your sexuality. And it was like this phase that she was going through. Who the fuck is Diana Jenkins? And like, why are we seeing pictures of Chloe Grace Moretz half dressed, like, you know, younger and looking strung out in a bathroom? That was just weird. It was weird. I'm not saying that I'm not saying I believe that it was a book of her clients. I'm just saying that I thought the whole project was weird and never understood it.
I mean, and it would be helpful to get an explanation of it. What was so interesting to me was
she won't talk about it.
She won't talk about it. And the person who was bringing it up was Rinna, who was featured in the book. And so my question would be, maybe not even to Diana, but to Rinna, were you aware of these rumors? And if so, how does that affect your decision of referencing the book during filming? Like, if I was Diana, I would maybe be having a conversation with Lisa Rinna about why bring it up not once, but twice.
Mm-hmm. The photographs tell a glamorous story of all that takes place behind these closed doors. They are a melange of playful, provocative, and intimate images that reflect the inspired mood of both Diana and Deborah. I guess Deborah was the photographer. It's just, it's called a fine art coffee table book. Okay.
Wow.
Well, I can see why someone would, you know, say that. I could see the logic leap of someone making up a rumor that it's about call girls and she's a madam. Because it's like, who the fuck is she that she is doing this book? Because she wasn't the photographer.
Yeah, but I think she came up with the concept, right? That had to be the whole purpose of it.
Yeah. But come on. You know she wasn't art directing that shit.
Probably not. What do you think production was thinking she would bring in terms of value? And do you think that investment has paid off?
I think, because she has serious money, like really serious
tons,
money.
All the money.
Yeah. And then she has this like young, hot husband. And she was like, what? She's 48 and gave birth? That's just wild to me. That's like crazy. And she speaks her mind. Like, she's not afraid to speak her mind and or like disagree with people. I think, but she is a little too, I don't want to say classy, but she's like, she's not like wanting to like get into, like she won't get into it with Sutton the way that Erica will get into it with Sutton or Crystal will get into it with Sutton. Like, Diana is more of like a Meredith, I'm not going to engage. Yeah. Kind of thing.
And when it comes to engaging, there was a little bit of a shift, temporary or a truce or otherwise, some sort of detente happening with Erica and Sutton. What did you make of that, of their little like bonding on the boat?
I think because Erica's drunk. Like, I think that, so when you're drunk, you're just like, you're feeling good. Maybe she has some pills and she's like, you know, you don't want to really fight with people. Like, she's, to me, I mean, she might have like a situational drinking problem, I don't know, but for me, like Erica's personality doesn't seem like it becomes unmanageable when she's lit. Like, she actually seems a lot nicer and more fun. But I don't know. I think she was just feeling good and just like wanted to be okay.
Do you think that there's a way for them to come out of the end of the season and be on like decent terms?
I don't know. Not if Sutton is going to stay real, you know, because Erica is really like trying to float this whole bullshit line of like the case is all done and she was proven to not have anything. That's not true at all. Like those things are public records. I'm glad Garcelle is saying it in her interviews. Yeah. Those are public records and everyone is like trying to be polite to her. I will tell you, I was liking Dorit's funeral look in the one episode after the robbery, but now it's like, you know, it's kind of become like a lot. the all black with the headband, and like it's a lot of that look, that like where she's like in mourning. Okay. It looks like she's like in mourning cosplay, you know?
I actually, to be honest, did not notice.
Isn't she wearing like a brooch at her throat? Like she looks like like Laura Ingalls Wilder or something, like, or someone like more wealthy, not like a pioneer, but like, you know, like that kind of that era of like, she's like all the way up, the collar's all the way up. She's like literally buttoned up.
Dorit and Garcelle just went to Cannes with Andy and Boy George to do some promo stuff for Bravo at some big convening. And it did kind of, to me, inspire the question of, like, is there a possibility for Dorit to maybe get closer to Garcelle next season, especially because the Dream Team has seemingly imploded IRL? Do you think that there's the potential for that, truly? But
they're on a vacation by themselves together, I'm sure, that they're bonding, you know?
Right.
Did they bring Garcelle for as an interpreter?
For Dorit.
No, because she speaks French. Like, were they all like, who speaks French?
Oh my god. Whatever language Dorit happens to be speaking at that time. I mean, it would be kind of interesting to have like a little bit of a backdoor alliance happening. Maybe genuinely, like, you never know. As I have learned from Love Island, people can get into seemingly significant relationships when they're sort of stuck together
in their own little
universe. It would be somewhat fascinating to see the two of them come together, because what do you make of the dissolution of the Dream Team trio?
I think that Dorit knows that Erica, like, and she like really backtracked last season, but she fucking knows that Erica, like, the money wasn't right, and that, you know, she didn't like the sound of widows and orphans, and like, and she and PK were laughing. I thought that was hilarious when they were
laughing
at it.
That was the best moment of the season.
Oh my god.
The ankle was the best moment of the season. And they know it, regardless of them being forced to apologize because Erica was sad. Please, the best moment of the season by far.
Totally.
Could watch it on a loop forever.
Totally.
Forever.
So I think Dorit knows, she knows what's up. And then Kyle is just always like trying to be diplomatic. So, you know, but it's, to me, I feel like the one with like the blind loyalty is Rinna, right? Mm-hmm. And they're still close now. What's going on with the whole, like, the Rinna and Kathy Hilton and the gays and hiring this gay guy, and like the gay guy said he was hired by Kathy Hilton to say stuff, but then it turns out that he was hired by Rinna. What is going on?
I don't think any of that was real.
None of it was true. Because Rinna,
I don't know,
like, retweeted it or not retweeted it, reposted it or something.
And then said that she was getting calls from people. None of it made sense. I like don't even want to. I just think it was all very odd. But I wonder if it will come out at the reunion, because it was such a big thing on like Bravo's social for 48 or 72 hours, however long it was. But like, I don't know what's going to happen with Rinna and Kathy, but I do feel like in some ways Rinna is creating a shield against critique about how she's handled the Erica stuff. I mean, like, Rinna vocally agreed with Erica that victims could be just filing nuisance lawsuits, which to me is completely indefensible and something that she should be held accountable. Like, she didn't just stay quiet. She vocally defended her.
Yeah.
And yet it's probably not going to be the biggest part of, you know, pressure at the reunion in a way that I think it should be.
I think also this stuff might come to the surface at the reunion because of whatever rift is going to happen between Kathy and Kyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That Rinna seems to be in the middle of. What was I just going to say? Oh, anyone who's seen The Housewife and The Hustler, or is The Hustler and The Housewife, whatever it was called, on Hulu, ABC News, that was ABC News. Like, they're not going to just, like, they fact check. They go to public record, say it's a news organization, and those people, their stories were heartbreaking. The guy who was burned and his girlfriend burned with him, and then he was supposed to get all this money, and then Tom just kept it and was like lying to him, like very clearly lying to him. It wasn't like a dementia thing. He was like lying and saying he was setting up a you know, an investment fund for him, and that just like was not the case. That's hard to walk back from.
And yet she does not seem to have any anger toward Tom. The anger that she is sharing with us is against these lawsuits and against people's perception of her. She's very, very worried about how people are judging her, but she has in no way appropriately judged Tom, which I think she should be held accountable for. I don't think all of that's just processing and a woman trying to navigate this huge fucking enormous.
Even Teresa Giudice was like, she was vocal about how she was angry at Joe for getting her into this hot water. And Teresa, I feel like, was actually just signing papers and didn't know what was going on. I truly believe that.
Same. And I also think there was a moment, was it last season, where Erica was shit-talking Tom's kids for not visiting Tom. And it's like, then this tells me that the divorce filing was completely,
it was a sham,
not real, because you're not even, you're literally, you filed from divorce from this man and have said how little you talk to him, and yet you are judging his children for this. Like, truly, where do you get off? You're supposed to be telling us the reasons that you filed for divorce, not the reasons that he's a sympathetic guy.
Yeah. I mean, when she did say in this most recent episode, when she said, you know, people wouldn't be mad at a doctor's wife if he was sued for malpractice, I thought that was an interesting, like, I was like, oh, that's true. But a doctor, like a doctor's wife, would they be like angry at the patients? Would they be like lashing out at the patients? Would they be, I don't know. It's because there's finances involved. It's different from malpractice. It's not like Tom fucked up while he was representing them. He won the cases.
To me, it's less doctor's wife and more Ruth Madoff, in the sense of like, I don't know your work for his firm. Noting, by the way, that he had you on legal documents as working for his firm, which is a side conversation. But it's, to me, not a doctor's wife. If a surgery goes wrong, are you going to litigate in conversation or in court the wife in that scenario? I would say no. But did the wife benefit from a surgery going wrong? Like, if you want to get into like the cost of the surgery, I guess we could sort of try to navigate that path. But this man stole money and bought you diamond earrings with it, which you were still saying, regardless of whether or not it was purchased with stolen money, deserved to be yours. So like, it's not the same thing. Like, you make
that
me
painting,
think more
that
of
million
Ruth.
Dollar painting, where is that?
Oh,
did
I'm
that
not,
get
I
did that I get mean. Taken, you know, that buying expensive art, I don't know if I've talked about this on here before, is this like very well-known method of laundering money that happens, and that's usually covered by Department of Homeland Security. I had to do a bunch of research for DHS, or like on DHS, so I learned about like this like art heist thing that they do, like it, like people, if you like there was like one case they had, it was in some country in South America, this guy that was like super, super rich. He was like the head of some like bank, and he was funneling this money, and he was buying art and putting it in different countries so that it was unable to be confiscated. So I'm like so curious where that painting went, you know?
So would it be something that the Department of Homeland Security would take as opposed to like the FBI in that situation? I wonder who has like, I don't think jurisdiction is the right term, but like
if they cross borders, it would be DHS probably, because they're border control as well.
That's an interesting question. I mean, like all the various ways of like what happens to all of all of these pieces. I mean, a lot of it's being figured out now, just even specific to whatever settlement she's going to come up with. But I mean, I don't know that her behavior, I don't know if her behavior on the show is hurting her in any way or just kind of like a stagnant sort of process where people, where she's, you know, it's maybe not going to help her overall with how people feel, or maybe it is, like maybe seeing her lighter and like trying to get through it and like be having funny moments is showing another side to her, which doesn't take away from her needing to be held accountable to, but does also show like, okay, there are other aspects to her that she herself has refused to reveal.
Yeah.
I mean, my God. It is a little bit of a to be continued. I need to have you back on. We need to discuss Girls Trip as the episodes go on. I think there's only 8 total, and it's wild that we've already had 3. Like, that feels insane to me.
We could use more than 8, honestly.
We could, and I also saw something on social, but I think it's, like, rumored and not real, so of course I'm going to talk about it, that New York's legacy is being, and again, this is, I'm sure, could be total bullshit, and also could be something that they're saying now to advance troubleshoot, and then they could change at any time, but it's being envisioned as also 8 episodes and 1 season only, like a swan song for the OGs. What do we think about that?
I mean, maybe it's not being envisioned as a one season. Maybe they are just doing like a one season contract and it's like, we'll see what happens, you know?
Yeah. It's like an option to pick up. That makes more sense. Right. What are you hoping for when it comes to the cast?
I don't know. I don't even understand the concept.
Concept.
No. I don't understand it. Like, why are we having to... versions of Real Housewives of New York, because Ramona can't be around black people? Like, is that what it is?
I mean, but like, literally, is that what it is? Is that they're so afraid of what she may do or say, but they don't want to cut her entirely? Is that what's happening?
I think that they just, I actually think that Ebony was bad casting, and I think that they should have found a woman that was like organically friends with Leah. Or, you know, in that kind of Upper East Side circle of those women, like a woman of color. Ebony just like coming in. I mean, that had to have been, that was like difficult. And then she felt like she needed to teach people about race. And it's like, you know, like the way Garcelle just fit in seamlessly with the women on Beverly Hills. Like, and she still talks about race, but she's not like pedantic about it. She like came in and says, you know, when something bothers her. But she just is like, you know, she knew Rinna for years. She's like part of that. Like they're kind of in the same, you know, they run in the same kind of circles. And they needed someone like that for New York. And they just, I think that they were rushed. They rushed it, the casting.
I think that it always helps when there's organic relationships, but I think that the season being a shit show was not on Ebony. I think that like Ebony maybe not being a
good fit for New York. No, it was on producers.
Yeah, I think it was, the season was a shit show because the producers were bad. Yeah. And I think that the way that they edited Black Shabbat so that Ramona's racism and anti-Semitism was framed around a to be continued was honestly grotesque. And that's not on, that was to me one of the lowest points of any Housewives moment, to be continued, whatever. And that's to me entirely not on Ebony. That's 100% on Ramona being a piece of shit who has never held accountable except for a one-liner half-assed apology on Watch What Happens.
She almost converted to Judaism.
Ramona,
that's what she said on that episode. But she was with a man.
She was probably, no, I was about to say, she was just trying to fuck somebody and was like, I'll do whatever you want.
Oh, I thought it was the guy she was engaged to. And so she was like going down that path. I don't know. I've never read Life on the Ramona Coaster.
Yeah, I have, and I don't remember that. What I do remember is opening a random page to a picture of her in a bikini saying, look at my fit body. So I don't know. I would love to get her thoughts on the Talmud, but I don't know if she has a two-piece that would be appropriate for that conversation. Yeah, I mean, I think, like, the Ebony thing, and to say thing, I mean, like, the... you know, difficulty of the ebony conversation is like so often, I'm not saying that you're doing this, but like so often when people think of last season, the conversation starts with ebony. And I just think like the conversation is like Ramona was very, very bad. And
yeah, I don't know. Ramona was being Ramona, though, is the thing. So it's like,
well, I think she revealed herself in a way that people who love Ramona, and you have the right to love whomever you want for a multitude of reasons. But it's like, okay, well, now she's really showing you who she is. Now there's no way not to.
She always did, right? I never had any sort of false image of her in my head. I always knew that. Like, I don't watch the shows because I like the women, you know, I watch the shows. I mean, and sometimes I do end up liking certain women on the shows. I watch for the drama.
Yeah, I wonder what would have happened. I wonder if we would have still had a split of Legacy and New York if we had had a reunion. I think that the reunion could have actually resolved a little bit, not in making Ramona a human person, but giving Ebony the opportunity, along with some of the other housewives, including actually Ramona, to share their opinions. And I think taking that away, it was like there was no chance for any closure for anybody who watched the show and was absolutely horrified. Like, you just took that away. So all you've left is our remembering our feelings of being horrified. How's that going to help New York? Like, which makes me concerned about, you know, the split path that we're on. But I guess we're just going to see. I mean, also, like, who's even going to be on it? Like, who's on New York? I don't know. There are these rumors.
Yeah,
but
I don't know if Leah is staying. I don't know.
Well, she would be on Legacy, right?
Well, she's young. I feel like she would be the one to, like, she'd be like the starter dough for the sourdough starter or whatever for the new Real Housewives, because like Legacy, I think of women of a certain age, you know?
Well, I mean, especially women of a certain, I would say, housewives generation of like, have you been on for a decade? You know, like, are you an OG or spiritual OG? Like, I think of Dorinda as a spiritual OG. Like, with Leah, though, doesn't that cross over into a little bit of a, like, I mean, she had such a bad second season, which she herself discusses. I don't see how them doing a reset but bringing Leah back, I don't know that she would even be interested in it, but I don't know what that does in a good way, in a productive way of moving the show forward if you bring Leah on, you know?
I mean, I would love to see Tinsley back.
Tinsley to me is a different conversation.
Scott. Yeah.
What is Tinsley doing right now?
I don't know. I'm assuming she's in Florida with her mother. I feel bad for her.
She reminds me of Jules in a certain way, just in the sense that, like, they didn't need this show. And she's not necessarily interested in doing, like, the social media game of it all. She really will kind of just live her life and do whatever thing she wants to do, which makes me want to see her all the more. Like, I want to see what she's got. I don't think that story was finished. I really don't.
I don't either.
Listen, I don't think this episode is finished, and yet here I am finishing it. Tell the people where they can buy the fabulous shirt that you're wearing, following you on social, what do we got cooking, what's coming up, pot psychology, and so much else. Tell us everything.
You can. When is this episode going to air?
Tomorrow.
Okay. This week I'll be publishing an episode of Pot Psychology where I talk about all my abortions I've had. I feel like it's really important that women who've had abortions start discussing it, to really try to take the stigma away. Also, if you are interested in donating to organizations that help women seek abortions, women who are living in hostile states where it's been banned, I have all that info on my website. It's pipedreams.fun. Just click on any of the abortion shirts. And if you buy a shirt or a hat, you can also, all the proceeds go toward those organizations. And that's about it, I think. Right?
Well, I just have to say that everybody needs to be following you on social, especially my social of choice, Instagram, because for so many dark moments this weekend and beyond, I think that your voice and your anger has been very much appreciated. Aww. I have laughed a couple times. Sent them to people being like, holy shit, Tracy's saying some stuff right now and it's amazing. Aww. So I always appreciate you coming on AG, but just your voice, I think, is incredibly necessary, especially right
thank
now.
Thank you so much. I always enjoy coming on. Can't wait to go in the cloth-us in person.
Oh my God, please. Can we please have a cloth, a little turtle time in the cloth? I would love a little Kiki record moment. And guys, follow me on social at Dame Galley. Thanks to all of you who bought tickets to Andy's Girls virtual live show with Looped Live last week. We had special guests, Lisa Barlow, who gave us so much I literally,
wow, I didn't know. She gave tea?
Oh my God. She at certain points was like, should I be saying this? And I was like, yes, Lisa.
Congratulations.
I had my face over. The crazy thing is, like, people can't see us when we're recording, but like, you could see me obviously at the live show. And I had my hands over myself for literally 30%. So you can still buy tickets and watch the show by getting on-demand tickets. And we've actually extended availability for those video on-demand tickets. Same price as watching live, $15. They will be available at loopedlive.com until this Sunday, July 3rd. So if you missed out, you actually didn't, you can still watch the show until July 3rd at loopedlive.com for $15. And thanks to, of course, Lisa Barlow. We had special guest Deandra Simmons, Dallas Housewife, as well. And, of course, the incredible Damian Bellino, OG of the AG, joined me to co-host. And, you know, if you want to donate to our Instagram donation fundraiser, et cetera, whatnot for Planned Parenthood, you can do that on my Instagram at Dame Galley. And shout out to all of you for being Patreon AGs. I cannot thank you enough. Truly, it's the only reason AG has stayed on the train has stayed on its tracks. Truly, Tracy, what are words? If you want to get exclusive bonus episodes and so much more, patreon.com/andysgirls. Send me your satchels of gold because I'll be doing another satchel spectacular this week. And Tracy Morrissey, keep on
keeping on, my
friend.
Oh, I will.
Guys, hang in there. You know, hope this ep gave you a little bit of something to think about until the next one. All right, talk soon, guys. Have a great one. Bye-bye.